Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, we're back on the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. Today's date is July 18th. My, how time is flying. 2011, beautiful Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I forgot to add the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I just want to give a shout-out to a good friend of mine. He passed away July 5th. I just heard about it over the weekend. He was out at the lake in Georgia, Lake Lanier. He jumped into the water from a boat, and he never resurfaced. He just jumped into the water. Being a diver, I understand what happened. Lake Lanier is a very deep lake. It's about 80 feet deep. And at some point around 14 feet, the water becomes is frigidly cold. And what occurs is a person will jump into the water and go down and feel the frigid cold air, and almost inadvertently, almost as a reflex reaction, do that. Because of the frigid cold water, and inhale a massive amount of water into their lungs and simply drown. And the lungs are what provide buoyancy, and the lungs being filled with water causes one to sink. He was found 3 days later in 60 feet deep of 60 feet of water. Now, this friend of mine was a very close friend in high school. He and I hung together a lot. We were part of this geek squad, if you will, back in the 70s. A lot of kung fu movies and comic books, that was what we dined on. You know, that was our bread and butter in high school, comic books and kung fu movies. I wish his family well. And I hope my good friend rests in peace. It was a sad time, really, because we were right around the same age, and in high school, we looked a lot alike, and we were a lot of times we were mistaken for, you know, for being brothers. So he's gone, and it's a sad time. Now, on to the business at hand. McConnell, Mitch McConnell has a proposal to essentially grant dictatorial powers to raise the debt ceiling unilaterally for Obama, which is what Obama really wants, to have dictatorial powers. And we have talked about this numerous times regarding Obama's desire for power. And Mitch McConnell seems to be willing to grant that power in a procedural move, and I find it to be appalling. What is Mitch McConnell thinking? You see, this is the kind of thing that a lot of conservatives have been afraid of for quite some time. The idea that the GOP will ultimately cave in to Obama's demands, cave in to Obama's wishes, and grant him what he wants, at least partially. Mitch, what the hell are you thinking? Granting the President of the United States near dictatorial powers to supersede the Congress, and thus the Constitution of the United States, even in a limited capacity, is fraught with peril. I can't imagine what you're thinking. I mean, no amount of Machiavellian shenanigans or machinations, whatever's going on in your head, this isn't going to fly. This not with this president. You might have gotten away with that with a Ronald Reagan or even a Bill Clinton. But to grant the president of the United States, this current president, any such powers, only so that he can go back and say that he acted in such a manner because it was an emergency situation, and then hearken back to the fact that the GOP controlled House had given such powers to the president under previous circumstances. You just don't do that. Tesla's in the house. Beach Bum, Craig, a whole host of guests. I love it. I'm glad you're here. So now, House GOP leaders have missed a 36-hour deadline President Obama set during a Thursday meeting for lawmakers to give him a national default. Who is he to give a deadline to anybody? And rightly so, the deadline came and went Saturday morning without a response from House Speaker John Boehner. Thank you, John. Show some backbone here. Instead, Boehner and House Majority Leader Eric Cantor plan to move the Cut, Cap, and Balance Act to the floor next week, which would require passage of a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution before the debt limit is raised. Now, Obama has stated that he's going to veto that. And why? Ask yourself, why would the President of the United States veto any such thing if it made it to his desk? A balanced budget? Why not? Because this president wants to spend. He wants to spend every single dime that he can get his hands on. The reason why Obama wants to tax is to not bring in revenue to bring down the deficit. No. But to spend. Spend that money. I'm sorry. My bad. To invest. To invest those funds in infrastructure and technology, the same technology that Obama says is causing people to be unemployed. Now, attempting to keep up with the Orwellian mental evasions of modern liberals can exhaust you. After weeks of following the president's pronouncements on the matter of the deficit, I'm undecided as to whether Obama is a liar or whether he has become disconnected from reality altogether. Which one is it? Anybody? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. I also have a toll-free number for those of you who are on a strict budget. 877-666-9305. Had that toll-free number for a long time. I've got like 2 minutes. So I think one person used it. I guess it's quite unnecessary given today's phone plans. But I did it anyway. So let's consider a few of the propositions put forward by the president on this matter. The matter of the debt ceiling and the current debt ratio we have here as opposed to what we're bringing in. What's going out and what we're bringing in. First, the president maintained, as in his press conference on Friday, that the problem is primarily a result of the actions of the previous administration. Once again, the president of the United States has sought to blame the previous administration. Imagine, if you will, I'm going to use me as an example here. I'm a newly minted Marine second lieutenant. I take over a rifle platoon. I come into the rifle platoon, and the platoon is filled with short-timers and shitbirds. Now, forgive the language, but that's what they're called when they are completely unkept Marines who are just not squared away. They're squared away Marines, and then they're what we call shitbirds. I think you can pretty much get the idea. I come in, and I've got the birds. I've got a whole bunch of them, and I've got a couple of squared away Marines. A couple of months down the road, my company commander approaches me and he says to me, "Lieutenant Jones, I noticed that your Marines are not up to snuff. They're not up to par here. They're not ready for combat. Why aren't your Marines in shape? Why aren't your Marines squared away?" And I say to my company commander, "Sir, it's not my fault. The previous platoon commander didn't run a good ship. He didn't square these Marines away. The previous platoon commander didn't do a good job training these young Marines. I just came into this job. I don't know what's going on. It's not my fault." How do you think that'd go over? How do you think that would make me look as a leader? Now imagine how I would receive the ultimate ass-chewing from that company commander, and to boot, a bad fitness report that would most likely ruin my career. It would be just that bad. I can tell you that right now without any exaggeration whatsoever. I would receive a fitness report that would ruin my career. I might make it to first lieutenant because pretty much first lieutenant is pretty much automatic after 18 months. But then I'd be done. My career would be over. I'd never make it to captain just based on that alone. So I might as well just go home. So now, magnify this situation. The president of the United States of America blaming the previous president for the predicament we're in nearly 3 years into his tenure as president. Imagine it for just a moment. All right. Now, Obama cited the war on terror, the Medicare prescription drug benefit, and the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts as a source of the deficit. This is a lie, completely. But you know what? I have friends. I have my good friend Maria. I have my good friend Joe. I have my good friend Brian, who will say, who will issue the talking points. Just like Barack Obama said, it's George Bush's fault. It's not Obama's fault. He's just doing the best he can. He's doing the best he can. It's not his fault. He didn't create this mess. He's trying to fix it. Blah, 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 blah. At some point while they're saying all this, I'm thinking, what a bunch of morons. And I'm going, wah, 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 wah. Okay, heard it all before. So let's travel back in time. Half decade to George Bush's second term, George W. Bush's second term. Over the first few years of his term, the deficit trended steadily downward. This is the truth, not my opinion. I'll let you know when I'm giving you my opinion, and I'll certainly let you know when I'm giving you the facts. And the facts are these. The deficit trended steadily downward from over $400 billion in fiscal year 2004 to $161 billion in fiscal year 2007. Let that sink in for a moment. In fiscal year 2008, as the recession began and the Democrat Congress took office, the deficit trended back up into the $400 billion range. Anybody surprised? Anybody at all? Now, prior to 2008, the federal government was about a year of growth from a balanced budget. With the war and the tax cuts and the prescription drug benefits all taken into account. Now, such a deficit as existed was less than 10%. Less than 10% of the present deficit. None of these costs was significantly increased since 2008. In fact, the cost of the war has declined. Therefore, to think that the $1.5 trillion increase is a result of the previous mentioned factors requires one to hold a magical belief that everything wrong in the world is the fault of the 43rd president. That in the face of all reality, not just Obama's reality, but all reality. Some liberals persist in this belief is unsurprising. As in their minds, President Bush has become a Goldstein-like figure of hate, conjured up to excuse the errors of the present government. I've heard it time and time again. Now, some of you out there, Beach Bomb, Craig, a lot of the guests, Tesler. Some of you are probably lucky enough not to have many liberal friends in your circle. And if you don't, then God bless you. God bless each and every one. But me, I'm surrounded by these folks. I'm surrounded by liberals. They're like ghosts. I'm surrounded by Marxists. I'm surrounded by socialists. As far as the eye can see, and each one of these loons, family members included, stick to the talking points. It's not Obama's fault. It's George Bush's fault. George Bush didn't react to Katrina. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush ran up the deficit with two wars. George Bush is responsible for unemployment. George Bush is responsible for meteors circling the cosmos. George Bush is responsible for the death of my dog. George Bush is responsible for high gas prices. George Bush is the reason why my cake fell last Sunday. my pineapple upside down cake fell flat, and damn it, it's George Bush's fault. My coffee was bitter when I went to Starbucks earlier today. It's George Bush's fault. My fine Trek Y33 classic mountain bike. Well, I went into the garage last night and my tire was flat. It's George Bush's fault. He snuck into my garage and flattened my tire. That bastard. So, this is what liberals believe. Everything that goes wrong with the economy and with everything else, they'll blame George Bush. Never mind the facts. Oh, that's just too inconvenient. It's George Bush's fault. So now, let's look at things right now. Where did the present deficit come from? Simple. I'll break it down for you and try not to bore you too much. It came from the current president of the United States. I know you liberals are probably up in arms over what I just said. And if you want to refute my facts, because I'm not giving opinion right now, I'm going to go ahead and throw the facts out there for you, loud and clear. And here they are. It's true. First, it's true that when he took office, the deficit had temporarily hit a record level. Yes, it's true. That was a result of a one-time emergency measure, such as TARP. Oh, and the bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Where the hell these names come from? I've often wondered. These were not, nor were they ever intended to be, the harbinger of a new fiscal order. Instead, they were all one-time charges that President Obama and his allies have sought to exploit in order to justify a massive expansion of the federal government. Now, the deficit that our current president inherited upon taking office should have immediately declined as these emergency programs ended. That it did not is a reflection of the conscious decision by this president, this current president, you liberals, with the backing of the Democrat Congress, to use what should have been a temporary situation, a new baseline for government spending, instead of being treated as a momentary and monstrous aberration under Obama. As a result of the stimulus, his budget, and health care reform, trillion-plus dollar deficits suddenly became the new normal. It's like back when my parents were young. That didn't sound right. Back when I was younger, gas was 89 cents. I remember back in 1998, gas was $1.01 in Chicago. I thought that was outrageous. And so while on the south side of Chicago visiting my parents, well, I drove a few extra miles and crossed the border into Indiana so I can get my gas at 97 cents a gallon. The tax rate in Indiana was lower than that of Illinois, so I could get my gas for 97 cents a gallon. No way in hell I was going to pay $1.01 for a gallon of gas. That was outrageous in 1998. Now, what's the normal gas price? Nearly $4. It's nearly $4, and nobody bats an eye. Well, few, because it's now the new normal. And that's what these liberals are counting on, folks. Spending and spending and spending some more Well, that's how it is now. And we got to deal with it. Only the strong, only those who truly care about the solvency, the continuation, the perpetuation of this great nation, are rallying against this new normal. And thank God for those folks. Thank God for the Tea Party. And thank God for John Boehner and Eric Cantor, who are leading the charge to turn back this new normal. The president and his allies now present massive increases in taxation as the only way to resolve this fiscal crisis. Taxing. And Marco Rubio shatters this myth about taxes, increasing taxes to pay down the deficit. Billy writes in the chat room that his dad paid 19 cents for a gallon of gas. Weren't those the good old days? I kid you not, Billy. In 1998, I needed to get back to South Florida from Chicago, and I had exactly $67 in my pocket. Now, from Chicago, Illinois, to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is a 24-hour ride, 1,378 miles. Takes 12 hours to get to downtown Atlanta and 12 hours to get to Fort Lauderdale. I had $67. That $67 got me back home to Florida all the way, plus the $11 that I spent on the Florida Turnpike. And that's all. Now, $67 will barely get me a full tank of gas now. So now, let's listen to my main man, Marco Rubio, whom I hope and pray will join Rick Perry in the presidential race as his running mate. I doubt that he will, but it would be a dream ticket for me. Let's listen to my man Marco Rubio explain it. He's going to break it down for us all. And hopefully there's some liberals out there who are listening to this program right now who get it, finally.
President, I stand here today. I've spent some time over the last few days really thinking about this dispute regarding the debt limit, as we're hearing from our constituents that are looking at Washington and asking themselves, what's going on up there? What are you guys doing? And it's a difficult process for people to understand. You know, they elect us and they send us here to serve our country and to solve problems. And yet they read in the newspapers all these startling statements now, that president saying a few days ago that he can't guarantee Social Security payments, others saying that our bond rating might be at risk. And of course, the reality of daily life, that more than ever, Americans are finding it hard to find a job. The ones that do have a job are working twice as hard, making half as much. Things are tough all across this country. They've gotten tougher over the last couple of years, unfortunately. And people have a right to be upset with the direction that we're headed. It was one of the reasons that compelled me to run for the United States Senate, was the hope to come up here and be part of making a difference, be part of putting this country on a track that helps us to embrace all the things that made us exceptional and unique and continue to make us exceptional and unique. So I look at this debate about the debt limit and say, well, what's the dispute about? Because two things are very clear. Number one, we can't continue to do what we're doing now. And anyone who argues that we can is not being realistic and, quite frankly, is doing a great disservice to the future of our country. You cannot have a government. It's this simple. You can't have a government that spends $1.5 trillion more than it takes in every single year. You cannot have a government that spends 40 cents out of every dollar that it spends is money that it's borrowing. You can't do that. That's not sustainable. Look at Europe. Look what happened yesterday. I think it was Greece was downgraded. They're on the verge of being in default. Why not Greece? I apologize. It was Ireland. Why is that happening in Europe? Why are these countries in trouble? It's not because they refuse to raise their debt limit. It's because people don't think they can pay back the money anymore. The people that lend you money, the people that sell you your debt, they're saying, we're looking at these countries, we don't know how you're going to pay us back. Your economy doesn't produce enough money. You have no plan to bring spending under control. We've lost confidence in you. That's the message that's being sent to Europe today. And if we keep doing what we're doing now, that's the message that's going to be sent here to America very soon. And the impact that that will have, not just on our country, but the world, is quite frankly devastating. That's what we're facing. The fundamental problem here is twofold. We have a government that spends too much money, more money than it takes in, and we have a government that doesn't take in enough money to pay its debts because its economy is not growing. And that's why I have argued from the days on the campaign trail when I got elected that the way out of this problem is a two-pronged approach, and you've got to do them both. You have got to cut spending. We have to have spending cuts and spending discipline. It doesn't all have to happen overnight, but we have to stop spending $1.5 trillion a year of money we do not have. We cannot continue to do that. And that's why I support the cut, cap, and balance plan, because it says we're going to begin to cut spending this year in a real way. We're going to cap the ability of government to continue to grow its spending in future years, and we're going to give the states the right to ratify a balanced budget amendment for our country that basically says you can't spend more money than you take in. States balance their budget. Businesses have to balance their budgets. Families have to balance their budget. If this federal government does not begin to balance its budget at some point in the near future, we may cross a line that's irreversible and put us in a place similar to what you're seeing in Europe today. So on the spending side, it has to happen. Again, people that pretend that we can do it overnight, of course not. It took a long time to get into this predicament. It's going to take a while to get out, but we have to start trending in the right direction. And it's critically important that some sort of spending discipline plan be put in place. And I know this is a political place. The debate is always framed by politics. I, like everyone else here, fully participates in the political banter. But today, for a moment, I want to step back from that and just say this. Ultimately, I want to see a solution to the spending plan, and I will welcome that solution if it comes from the White House, if it comes from our minority leader, if it comes from our majority leader. I just want someone to step up and offer a plan that begins to bring spending discipline under control. I know I've endorsed one. It's called Cut, Cap, and Balance. It's out there now. If there's a better way to do it, offer it now. What are you waiting for? Now's the time to offer it. If someone in this building has a better way to bring spending under control, then now's the time to offer it. Don't negotiate in the shadows. All these negotiations that are going on, we're hearing about in the press. Where's the plan? Where's the document that tells us and shows us how you bring spending under control? Because now's the time to show it. Now's the time to do it. What are you waiting for? That's on the spending side. But spending cuts are important. They're essential. We can't do it without it. We can't do it without fiscal spending discipline. But it's not enough. We also have to grow. We have to grow. And that's where the crux of this debate has really gotten. You hear in the press, oh, this fight is because certain people don't want to raise taxes on certain people. And that's really not what this issue is about. I think everyone agrees that we need growth, that government needs growth in its revenue so it has a way to pay down this debt. The debate is about where does this revenue come from? Some argue, well, the way you get more money for government is you raise taxes on people. You raise taxes on really rich people. And I have two problems with that, and neither one is ideological. My first problem is it doesn't work. You can't possibly raise taxes high enough to collect enough money to make a difference on the debt. I looked at some of the tax increases that the president and others have proposed. It adds up to less than 10 days of deficit spending. Even if you raise the taxes of what they define as rich to 100% next year, it's still not enough money just for 1 year's deficit. And so tax increases don't work because they don't work. They don't generate enough money to do anything about it. And the second reason why I can't support tax increases is because it will kill jobs. And this debt thing is a huge issue. It's really important. But the jobs issue is even more important. The number one issue in Washington is the debt, and rightfully so. It's a huge, enormous generation. But unemployment is the number one issue in America. We're talking about people that have worked hard their entire lives, that went to school, that did everything that was asked of them. And now they go out into the job market and they can't find a job. It's especially astonishing among young people, 25, 30 years of age. They went to college, they got their degree. Now they're out there trying to find a job and they can't find one, certainly not for what they studied to be. We have to get that turned around. Every other problem we face in our country, the housing crisis, all these other problems become easier to deal with if you have more people working, people making money, people paying their taxes, people spending money into the economy. Unemployment is what we have to get at. And you're not going to create jobs by tax increases. And if someone in this building, if someone in Washington has a tax increase that creates jobs, I invite you to offer it. We're all ears. Right now, if someone in Washington has a tax increase that helps create jobs, then now's the time to offer it. I would submit to you, you're not going to find one. Because because there are no tax increases that will create jobs. And if you don't create jobs and you don't grow this economy, there is no way out of this debt. You cannot cut your way out of it, and you certainly can't tax your way out of it. Does that mean we don't do anything about taxes, like I hear some commentators saying in the press? Of course not. Our tax code is broken. There are a bunch of things in the tax code that do not belong there, and I think there's bipartisan support. Whether the media tries to ignore it or not, I think there's bipartisan support in the Senate, in the House, in Washington for tax reform. Tax reform, we can get done. Tax reform means we're going to look at the tax code. And if there are things in the tax code that are there because somebody hired a lobbyist and got it put in the tax code, but it's not really good policy, it shouldn't be in there.
Okay. Now, who can refute that? You know what I love about what Senator Rubio said? You know what I love about it? Well, I'm going to tell you right here and right now. What I love about what Marco Rubio said was that it was all fact. Every word was fact. This idea that we should tax the rich, that the rich should pay their fair share, that the corporate jet owners should pay more money into the system, that Obama says that grandma and the lady who's trying to get her kid through college shouldn't have to suffer because those bad, bad rich folks who are flying around in their corporate jets are flying around in their corporate jets. Well, they should pay more. Never mind that those filthy, dirty, awful rich people are paying the majority of the taxes for this country already. Never mind that. That's just, what, facts? They should pay even more because they're rich. What I love about what Marco Rubio said was the facts are irrefutable. I love it when a person speaks to me in terms of logic and facts. Liberals speak to you about how they feel. Talk to any liberal friend, your mama, if she's a liberal, dad, grandma, brother, sister, cousin, girlfriend, boyfriend. If they're liberal, they're not going to say to you, "I know." They're not even going to say to you, "I think." They're going to say, "I feel." Well, I feel this way about it, or I feel that way, or this is how I feel. Quite frankly, I don't give a damn about how you feel. What are the facts? And the facts are these, that if we tax Mr. Obama, 100% of those corporate jet owners, those millionaires and billionaires, it wouldn't pay down the deficit so that it's even remotely noticeable. So what is all this deal about? The rich paying more into the system. Mr. Man, it's not about paying down the deficit. Admit it. Mr. Obama, you are not talking to fools here. It's about bringing in more revenue so you can spread it around, so you can spread the wealth. And you know what? I applaud you, Mr. Obama, because right now you're coming out. You're coming out of the socialist Marxist closet. More and more, as your administration comes to an end, you're admitting that you are a Marxist, that you are a socialist, and that you seek to rob from the rich and give to the poor. Now, I would like to go ahead and have a contrast between the malaise speech between Jimmy Carter and President Obama's recent speech. Listen carefully to the similarities between these two clowns.
It is a crisis of confidence.
Our economy may be weakened and our confidence shaken.
Our people are losing that faith.
It's tempting to turn cynical and to be doubtful about the future.
The people are looking for honest answers, not easy answers.
We cannot rely on quick fixes or easy answers.
Not politics as usual.
We are tired of business as usual.
You often see a balanced approach that demands sacrifice.
A balanced way where everybody's sacrificing a little bit.
A little sacrifice from everyone.
We need shared sacrifice.
Congress must enact the windfall profits tax without delay.
If the wealthiest among us are willing to give up a little bit more, then we can solve this problem.
I'm asking you to take no unnecessary trips.
Don't blow a bunch of cash on Vegas.
To use carpools or public transportation whenever you can.
We can't drive our SUVs.
And to set your thermostats to save fuel.
We can't keep our homes on 72 degrees at all times.
I do not promise a quick way out of our nation's problems.
I wish I could tell you there was a quick fix to our economic problems.
There are no short-term solutions.
There aren't going to be a lot of great short-term solutions to this problem.
There is simply no way to avoid sacrifice.
We are going to have to ask everybody to sacrifice.
What I love about it, you want to know what I love about that. You're saying to yourself, what do you love about it, Dr. Jones? I know you're saying it. And you know what I'm going to say? Both of those guys are going to be one-term presidents because of this craziness. You know what I'm going to say. And here's what I'm going to say. Jimmy Carter, as brilliant as he was at the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis in physics, my undergraduate degree, my undergraduate major, he was a complete idiot and failure as president. He was a one-term president, completely destroyed by my main man and yours, Ronald Wilson Reagan. President Obama obviously stole that speech and reworked it, thinking that, hey, well, it didn't work for this idiot, but it'll sure work for me, and I'm going to lay it down. It's not working. Now, Rick Perry, either you know what or get off the pot. Because Rick Perry, you can beat Barack Hussein Obama and save the United States of America. Literally. Now, announce before the end of the week, please. Go down and kiss Marco Rubio's ass, both cheeks. And convince him to run as your running mate. If you can do that, Mr. Perry, Governor Perry, game over. Barack Hussein Obama will be sent packing, as well he should be. Before you move in, give the White House a good scrubbing. And we can get on about the business of saving this great country of ours. Because clearly, this president doesn't believe, as my mama used to say, that fat meat is greasy. He doesn't believe that fat meat is greasy. And it is. My mother used to say that to me when she was just before she was about to issue a rebuke or a spanking. It was a warning. And I heeded that warning. But Barack Obama is not heeding that warning, and he's about to get his butt spanked. He's about to get his narrow butt spanked. And thank God for that. We have a call on the line on the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. Craig, you're on.
Dr. Jones, how are we doing?
Hey, great. How are you?
All right. You know, the reason I called in is this is something I was thinking about the other day when I heard his speech and all of the similarities to Carter's speech, and I think this is just further proof that you know we're seeing that socialist agenda in play. You know, we all understand that, but it's just further proof that they think it just hasn't been done the right way. You understand? You know,
yeah.
Carter had it right. He just didn't implement it right. You know, it's not a failure of the socialist theory. It's a failure of those trying to implement it. Yet, the beautiful thing about a free society, believing in the free market and believing in freedom and liberty in the Constitution, is that, you know, it doesn't need to be worked correctly. It needs to be defended correctly. That's all you have to do with freedom,
yeah,
is just defend it. You don't have to manipulate it. You don't have to rely upon this overseeing force to implement it correctly or whatever this nonsense belief is. All that you need to do is defend the freedom, and the freedom works itself because the freedom lies within the people. So
you know what? That's exactly right, and I agree. You know, I think that what do you think about the possibility of Rick Perry getting into the race and what his chances are?
What are the chances of Perry getting in? I'm perplexed of why he's not in. I almost believe that if he was going to be in, he'd be in. I don't know what's going on there, you know, to be honest with you. It's getting very late for that run, in reality, especially
yeah,
in today's, as far as getting in there to raise the money and stuff. The only thing I want to say about the candidates, the unfortunate truth, the reality is that anybody but a, I believe a Palin or a Paul or somebody of that nature is really our only threat to a second administration. The reason being, not so much that I disagree with them so much, I think that they polarize the independents enough, a Palin or a Paul, for some reason, disenfranchise individuals, and a low turnout would be beneficial for Obama, if that makes sense. They
yeah,
either,
yeah,
you know what I mean? They're so polarizing, and it's not that I wouldn't support them. It's just for some reason they don't appeal to that. Palin almost appeals to the Republican base so much and disenfranchises those independents that you would see a low turnout, and that's what would, you wouldn't see a low turnout obviously for Obama's base, but you would see that low turnout. And then a Paul is, you know, I, for some reason that poor guy cannot capture momentum. So I don't think he could beat an Obama, but just about anybody else breathing could beat Obama, to me.
Well, you know what? I tend to disagree with you on that
mm-hmm.
part of what you said, that anybody could beat him, because you know I think that Obama is he's
mm-hmm.
not the brightest bulb.
I'm talking about the candidates. I'm not talking about anybody in general.
Yeah.
Any of the other candidates, Newt Gingrich, even Newt. I think there's internal things happening there that we just don't completely know all about. But even Newt Gingrich, if somehow he could come back and win, he could beat Obama, because at the end of the day, if whoever wins that primary, we gotta pay attention to him because they're gonna be in our face. And if Newt's
yeah.
message, if Newt's message gets before somebody, an independent, you know, that spectrum that he needs to vote from, Newt could get that vote. Santorum, even Rick Santorum, they're not bully enough. I think that's Newt's problem, Santorum's
yeah.
problem.
Mm-hmm.
Pawlenty, Mitt Romney, Bachman, these people demand that you come and listen. You know, they have that assertiveness for some reason. The other candidates don't seem to get so.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think Rick Perry has all that in a bag of KC masterpiece.
Yeah, I mean, I love
him. Yeah,
I mean, I love his politics. I love the way he, you know, it's no night. You know, one of the, you know, when he threatens secession, you know, I mean, I wholeheartedly believe that he was serious to an extent on that.
Yeah.
You know, he does, you know, he is going to put his state first. And if he becomes the president of the United States, that's what we're really looking for, is somebody that will put the United States above all else. That's what we should be looking for in our leaders. That is the majority of our problems, is that we don't put the United States first. There was a poll that I shared with people on my show on Saturday. You know, we have, what is it? I think it's France. More people have a favorable opinion when, I think it was France was polled, than people have a favorable opinion of America in America. You know, this weird paradox of sort of self-hate, you know, when we negotiate to, trade agreements, we're worried about the other country before we're worried about the ramifications of that trade agreement on the United States. When we're trying to choose how to defend this country from a realistic and a reality of this terrorist, radical Islamic terrorism, we're worried about other countries before the safety of our people. We are so worried about how people think about us. In reality, we think less of ourselves than a majority of countries that their opinion somewhat matters. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, but we shouldn't be self-destructive in the fact that we should just go around trying to diminish how people think of us. But we should always put the security and the financial and otherwise of the United States first, and that's what you get with Rick Perry, which is the same thing we got with Bush for all of his failed policies. You know, you got a clear message from Bush that, you know, we will not be backing down.
But Southern Sense, who has a great show herself, I mean, it's really good and informative and humorous at times. I mean, I love her show. She, along with several other folks, have had take issue with Rick Perry for a very specific proposal. I think it's a proposal. I hope Southern calls in if she and corrects me if I get it wrong. She's concerned that she would like Perry to explain the I-65 corridor from Mexico to Canada. She says she has a problem with that. What do you know about it, and what are your thoughts?
Well, sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay.
Did you get that?
You're talking about the we're opening up with the truck drivers and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's not the first time I've heard this issue being brought up when I speak especially glowingly of Rick Perry. A lot of folks are having problems with a lot of conservatives. Do you know anything about it? What do you think?
You know, I think that I don't know. This is one that I am really am torn on, because you do have the dynamic of, one of the ramifications that's been put out there is the fact that you would deplete the loads available to American drivers, for one thing. But most importantly, I think that before you open up, to me it's more of a border issue.
Yeah.
Before you increase the ability for individuals to easily move between the United States and Mexico, shouldn't you first close that that flow and deal with it, have a secure border before you increase sort of a backdoor way to get around it?
Well, yeah, but I must admit that I don't know much about the proposal, but. I vowed to research it when I first heard this issue being brought up and with regard to Governor Perry, but I didn't get around to it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Later on tonight, I'm going to research this issue and figure out exactly what's going on with it and try to understand why my good friend Southern Sense, Annie, has concerns about it, and a lot of other conservatives have mm-hmm. issues with it, and I would really like to know what this is all about.
I haven't, like I said, all that I know is the reports that have came out about it. I haven't really sat down and researched it enough to give a definitive answer on that, but you know, I have issues with it. I would say that.
Yeah. Well, I want to get the word and exactly what the issue is, because I would really like to understand it, so that I can, because you know what, honestly, it's not going to stop me from voting for Perry or supporting him. I mean, I'll work for his campaign. And that's not going to stop me at all.
Right, yeah. And I guess it was he was a champion of this. Is that what it is? Because this is a federal. Is it that they have problems? Was he really championing the effort to get this through, or?
I do not know.
I don't know how this really, you know, just because it would fall in his state, because it really is a federal. I don't know. You know, I don't know the extent that he could have been involved with this, other than, like I said, if he was really championing it and trying to push it through for, in some way, shape, or form. But you understand, I don't know how this has fallen at his feet so much. That's what I would like to know.
Yeah, ditto. I'd like to know that as well. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report and my good friend Craig Shaw. Craig, anything else to add to this topic?
No, I just wanted to comment on that Obama. That was really fun. And, you know, and again, welcome you to Wahoo Radio. And make sure everybody knows, if you go to wahoomedia.com/theconservativereport, there's a link in the chat. If you click on that, on the upper right-hand corner of Dr. Jones's page, you will find a Stitcher badge that says click here, and you will find the Conservative Report on Stitcher. If you go there, basically you can take the Conservative Report anywhere you go. Download the application, and you will have all of the updated shows right there on your smartphone, iPad, iPhone, whatever the case may be. And you can listen to him anytime at your leisure. So just want to make you all aware of that. And you can also catch my show, We Are America, as well as Insane Government. So make sure you go visit wahoomedia.com/theconservativereport.
All right. Thanks, Craig. I do appreciate
it.
I sound
like an infomercial, didn't I?
It was beautiful.
Sound like an infomercial.
Could be the
Is this
new
3 o'clock in the morning?
You could be the new Billy May.
Oh God! Yeah. There you go. I don't like the way that ended.
That's right.
All right, thanks,
man.
A lot.
Thanks a lot. All right. Okay. That was my new friend. Hopefully, a friend for a very long time. Craig Shaw of Wahoo Radio, and please tune in to his show as well, along with Insane Government. The Oscars are coming up. The Oscar buzz right now is surrounding actress Meryl Streep, and it's growing, and I dig it, thanks to her portrayal of Margaret Thatcher. And I love Maggie, you know, I think she's hot still, Margaret Thatcher. Yeah, you heard me say it. It's worth remembering that one of the real Iron Lady's most famous observations, that any housewife could manage the British economy. She said that. Think about that. Any housewife could manage the British economy. President Obama should heed that advice and realize that economy begins at home. Unfortunately, his recent statements on the economy give little reason for hope on that front. Very little reason. Because the guy is an ideological nightmare. I mean, really. He doesn't know the first thing about the economy. He has no idea what's going on in America. I'll be right back in just a minute.
Hume has some thoughts on how the White House is dealing with the economy right now. Good evening, Brett.
Hi, Brett. The evidence mounts that no one in the high councils of the Obama administration has an idea of how to get the economy out of its current rut. Senior advisor David Axelrod recited the familiar litany on Sunday. You know, we inherited a huge mess from George W. Bush. The stimulus really has made things better. Yes, we need tough new financial regulations to avert another scandalous Wall Street collapse. He insisted the administration is not anti-business, and it may not be. But the president has never worked for, let alone run a business, and nearly all those around him are from the worlds of politics, government, and academia. The possibility that businesses are not investing in hiring because of deep uncertainty about everything from taxes to credit to regulation seems lost on them. They believe deeply that the driving force in a robust economy is aggregate demand, and that dispensing cash through government spending is the way to stimulate that demand. But what seems to be needed now is not just investment to meet current demand for products. What's needed now is investment in the expectation that the products produced will themselves create demand, and that the rewards for taking the risk will not be taxed away by a government insatiable for revenue to cover its spending and insistent upon ever more regulation to keep greedy businesses in line. In other words, lower taxes, lighter regulation, and less government spending. The exact opposite of the policies now in place. Brett?
Brett, what do you think the likelihood is that this administration will heed the advice or recommendations of this debt commission?
Well, remember, the debt commission does not report till after the fall election. And the political landscape may look very different indeed then. The big majorities the Democrats have enjoyed are likely to be gone. They may even be the minority party on Capitol Hill. The situation for President Obama may be very different. So the big challenge he may decide to face then is not more social spending, not new big government entitlement programs or further such programs, but tackling perhaps this debt problem. And if he does that, the commission may be the roadmap, and he might find a lot of Republican support for it.
But
might.
This administration you could see shifting that much?
That's why I said might.
All right, Brett, thanks.
All right, obviously the President of the United States did not heed any advice from anybody, especially his own debt commission. It just didn't happen that way. All right? So here's the deal. The President of the United States is running this country into the ground, and I'm going to bring my good friend Southern Sense in, who has a great show on Blog Talk Radio, to give us an idea of what's going on with Rick Perry and this I-65 deal. Maybe she can explain it to us so we'll understand exactly what's happening, because this is the first time I heard about it. A lot of folks are concerned about the proposal that he has put forth. Annie, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Hi, Doc. How you doing this evening?
I am wonderful. How are you?
All right. How's my mic doing? Because I'm on Skype and sometimes it breaks up.
Sounds extremely clear.
Oh, great. This was a number of years back under Bush where they wanted this corridor for transport going from Mexico up through the center of the United States through Kansas City at one point into Canada. And it would then go from Kansas City spread out to the East Coast and West Coast, but, you know, the idea was to transport goods straight from Mexico all the way up. And what it would have done would have placed Mexican border guards and police with inside the borders of the United States, especially in the hub in Kansas City, to act as border agents for these transports. A lot of us fought it rather vehemently because we did not want our sovereignty violated. Whatever mm-hmm. occurs within our borders should be held handled by U.S. agents and law enforcement. We were able to get it stopped. But in the interim, they have quietly still continued to build this route. And I believe it's going through Des Plaines. It's going through Des Plaines, I believe, and they're building the hub there. But they no longer are using foreign agents to manage the traffic. But what happens is once these trucks get across the U.S. border, how do you guarantee they stay on the route? And this is another thing that ties in with them allowing Mexican trucks to now come freely into the United States border. If you remember correctly, it was about 6 months ago the EPA said because these trucks don't have catalytic converters, the EPA will pay $1,600 of our taxpayer money to install these catalytic converters into these trucks. As soon as they come over the borders, they pull over, we install these things, they make their deliveries, they go back to Mexico. And my question was, what stops them from ripping them outside, out of the trucks, selling them on the black market, coming back over the border, and getting another one put in by courtesy of the taxpayers of the United States, and still make their run?
Which would be so much like the government to do just that.
It is. I know I started off on one, but it gets so convoluted, the things they are doing, because one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And they're attacking us in several different areas. And this I-65 corridor, which they tried several years ago, is still being built and ongoing. And then you add into this with the EPA, and now you now have this new permission, because if these drivers are now trained and taught to read the English signs, they now can come in. They're doing so many different things to allow them to come over the border, and it's all to get this I-65 corridor and transport, the northwest, north-south corridor between Canada and Mexico, wide open. And once they're inside our borders, how do you stop them?
Indeed, and now I understand a whole lot better. But how does Governor Perry figure into this?
He was a proponent of it at the time it was being offered, and at that time I believe he had just become governor of Texas, and he was highly in favor of it. And the reason being, Texas would get a lot of money from it, but they'd also probably get a lot of illegal immigration and drugs and so on and so forth, which obviously is now occurring.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, why was he for it, knowing all the pitfalls were, and knowing it would have placed foreign agents, foreign law enforcement agents within inside our own border?
Okay, but let me ask this, Annie. That was a while ago now. What is his stand on this issue now?
That is what I'm asking. Mm-hmm. What is his stand now?
Okay. All right. I strongly suspect that, being the political animal that he is, that it will be negative. That he won't. That'll be. That was then, and this is now. And I'll accept that. I don't think that this is an issue or should be an issue at this point. With regard to Governor Perry, if he is for this I-65 corridor and given all the examples of what could go wrong based on what you've just stated, I would have to have some clarification as well, honestly. I don't think it would stop me from supporting him. What about you?
Well, I think if in the end he was the only nominee, then yes, I would stand behind him. I would just want him to publicly explain his stance and clear the air on it. If he had a change of heart, then be public about it and say, I had a change of heart, honestly.
Yeah.
As, for example, he was a Democrat before he was a Republican. Well, heck, so was Ronald Reagan. But at least Ronald Reagan was able to explain it. Explain yourself so we can understand it. And when we pull that lever, we have full confidence in you.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I will go ahead a little bit later and look more into this so I can get a better understanding of it and try to ascertain, where his stand is to this day. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to go ahead and put in a call to his office, and I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask about it. I'm going to go on record as asking about it and try to get some information on where the governor stands on this issue. I'm going to talk to whomever I need to talk to tomorrow. I'm going to devote a good deal of my time to getting this question answered. Have you put in a call to his office to try to get some clarification?
At this point, no, but I started last week collecting information on it. And I don't know if you do, but I do this. I collect, whenever I do my shows, I got all my notes. I have it in a file. and I've got it at my feet at this moment, and I'm just trying to remember what I filed it under.
Yeah.
But I have one for personalities and one for issues, and I'm going to need one of those things, those five drawer cabinets very soon.
yeah, I understand. Craig in the chat room asked if do you know whether or not this idea originated goes back to the Clinton administration?
I suspect it does, but I'm going only by memory at this point. Like I said, I don't have the actual notes in front of me, but I will try to look at it, and I do apologize. I'm just going off the top of my memory, but I know the Bush administration had a strong proponent for it, and it was under Bush that we were able to stop it, and I'm just trying to remember what the heck I filed it under. I don't know if I put it underneath his name. Because, I have personalities and then I have issues, but I do know I had collected notes on it. So just bear with me while I go through it. So if you want to go on to something else while I look.
All right. Well, while Annie Southern Sense, who is a great show on Blog Talk Radio, look for it. While she looks that up, because we really like to get some answers on this, because I tell you what, every time I mention Rick Perry's name, especially on Blog Talk Radio, this issue is brought to light, and there seems to be a great deal of concern for about it. And while Annie looks for that, we'll go ahead and finish up this topic, and then we'll close out the show after that. So I'm going to go ahead and put you on hold. When you're ready, let me know, okay?
All right, baby doll.
All right. President Obama should have heeded the advice of the great dame Margaret Thatcher. Because the president's press conference on Monday epitomized the do-something nature of this administration. He wants to do something about everything, from getting more kids into college to fighting global warming, although the latter is less evident these days, at least in public. The trouble is that he thinks he needs more and more and more and more and more of our money to do it. So he wants any budget deal to include tax raises. Not to pay down the deficit, mind you, but to spend, or rather invest, that tax windfall into more of his pet projects. Now, let's take, for example, college education grants, which the president suggested should be funded by an increase in taxes of millionaires like himself. The president's budget request for 2012 contains an allocation of $36 billion for an increase in Pell Grants for students from poor backgrounds to attend college. That's our entire federal budget request. That's out of an entire budget request of $3.7 trillion, which makes Pell Grant expenditures just 1% of the total. Looking at that from the viewpoint of Mrs. Thatcher's proverbial housewife, we can compare it to a medium household income of about $46,000, which after taxes is about $3,000 a month. The size of the problem that President Obama singles out as requiring tax increases is equivalent to a household budget shortfall of $30 a month. A competent economic manager should be able to deal with that sort of problem by tightening his or her belt elsewhere. The president, his seeming incapability to contemplate this demonstrates just how out of control the federal spending machine is. The guy is supposed to be brilliant. Is he an idiot? Is he an empty suit? Is the emperor buck naked and nobody's telling him? Or does he just want to rob from the rich to give to the poor? Is he Robin Hood? Got my good friend on, Dave, author of the book Stay Mad on. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Good evening, Doctor.
Hey, there he is.
He is not Robin Hood, because if you recall the story, Robin Hood was the equalizer from the government. He stole from the government to give back to the people because the government was taking too much.
Then so we need a Robin Hood.
Right. But he can't be Robin Hood in this case because he's the
government.
Prince John. Prince John.
I tell you what do you think about this whole debt crisis thing, Dave? What do you think we're going with it?
Well, I mean, I just hope. I guess I've been convinced that the best thing that, for instance, Republicans could do is actually nothing, because then he would be left with dealing with everything that he's created in the past couple of years.
I see.
Obama, that is.
Yeah, but don't you think that the blame will fall on the blame for any potential outcome will be blamed on the Republicans if they do nothing?
Why? How much of that new stuff that he's trying to pay for did they vote for?
Well, not much.
No, that's what I mean. All they have to do is message that. I mean, they, mm-hmm. which they suck at, but
yeah.
That's how I can see it. I mean, I've listened to a few different other show hosts, and you know the way they break it down, it just seems so simple. All they have to do is like just don't even go to the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not going to put Obamacare on the table. You know, you're going to tell us what is and what isn't off the on the table. Fine, okay. When you're ready to deal, you know. Well, you know, you call us when you're serious. But until now, it's like he's acting all hurt and he's you know getting all pouty and leaving the room and whatever.
Whining. You know,
well, exactly, and it's working on him. You know, it's like the parent that gives in to the tantruming kid.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And it worked in the past and it's going to keep working. And he's going to keep using it as long as it works.
Yeah. Hold on, Dave, for just one moment. Annie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You got it? You got the information?
Yeah, I got it. I've got it where it actually did not go back to Clinton. It definitely was under Bush, which is one of the reasons why Perry was pushing for it. And I gave you the original article, which is under Jerome Kors, the first link I get. The second one is the new reinvigorated one, their new map and how it's going to go through the United States and so on and so forth. So it's still alive and well. They just found an end run around the original taxpayer balking of it, because we did stop it back in 2009. However, it did not die. It comes under Obama.
This is the
Trans-Texas Corridor going from Texas up to Canada.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yes, it is very much alive and well.
Okay, it is live and well. Craig Shaw's question has been answered. What do you think of it, Dave? Would this issue prevent you from supporting Governor Perry?
Yes.
Really? And talk about it. Talk about why, if you will.
Well, because it's the same as George Bush and George Bush's daddy, where it's a globalist mentality. That's what he's coming from. And quite frankly, anything for me, like I said, I'm seeing things through the window of, you know, the communist goals and globalists. And, you know, that's what I wrote about a lot in my book. And, you know, whenever I hear somebody making, you know, lurches towards globalism, I know that it's only bad for the United States. Because like I said before, you can't, you in order to have a global, you know, a global economy, a global government, or, you know, global control, you kind of have to have a level playing field. Otherwise, you'll always have unrest.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to level the playing field, America needs to be brought down to the standard, you know, more equal to the rest of the world. You can't make everybody rich, but you can damn sure make everybody poor. And what have I seen in the last 2 or 3 years?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So this issue for you, and certainly for Southern Sense, is of such paramount, is of such importance that it would actually cause you not to support Rick Perry for president. I have that right?
Well, I mean, if he wins the primary, you know, it's kind of like a Ron Paul thing. If he wins the primary, I'm going to vote for him. You know,
mm-hmm.
But for primaries, no, I'm gonna I'm going to vote. I'm going to have to vote my heart and let the chips fall where they may.
And right now, out of the candidates that are available to us, who's your main person?
Probably Herman Cain.
Herman Cain. Okay. And Southern, who's your main candidate right now?
I am still up in the air. You know, I had a lot of faith in Pawlenty, but he's proved to kind of wimp out on me. I thought Santorum would come out of the gate a little bit better, little bit stronger. Bachman, she's appeared at a couple of events over here, and her organization is not as well run as it should, which concerns me. I see faults in all of them, and I see strengths in all of them, and I'm going to be one of those people that's going to be up to the last minute. I'm going to be going up to that betting booth with my $5 in my hand going, okay, am I doing a win, place, and show here, or am I going to bet it all in?
Yeah.
And normally I'd make a lot of money on win, place, and show. But
yeah.
But I'm having a hard time, and I think that's what a lot of other people out there that will vote independent, Republican, and conservative, we're having a really hard time because we don't see anyone that is going to be our shining knight on that hill. The person's not out there, and Mitt Romney definitely disappoints me in many ways.
Oh, my God. They're counting him as the front runner,
unfortunately, the news media is the ones touting him as the front runner, and guess what? Mainstream media is not conservative and Republican, so you know that explains that issue right there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I've said it before.
Go ahead.
I've said it before. I've mentioned it before. Whoever they like or can at least tolerate is who I'm going to run from.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
yeah. Like, yeah. Good strategy.
All right. Well, this brings us up to a big problem here, because in a lot of states, people do not vote in primaries along political party lines. You know, your Democratic primary is not for Democrats only. You get people crossing over just to jam the ticket. And we have that here in South Carolina. And I spoke to Chad Connolly, and he was on my show. And I also spoke to him privately. And I said, can we get these primaries to be party specific only? I mean, the idea of a Republican primary is for Republicans only to vote. But no, they allow anyone to vote.
Don't forget that worked the other way back in 2008 with Operation Chaos. Remember how Rush had that going?
Yeah.
He had everybody voting for him.
It gave us Obama. How well did that work? I don't think.
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying, but people were doing it. So, you know, it's a goose and gander.
It cost us an election. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
I'm not going to argue that point. I'm just saying, I'm just doing it, you know, it's the goose and the gander thing to me.
Hey, you know, Dave, I sent you a couple of emails just to tweak you.
Oh, yeah. I got them. And I sent, check your messages, okay?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Dave, I did get your email concerning Tesla, and I did respond. Yeah, we want to go ahead and support Tesla's comeback, as it were, with being on his show and calling in, and you know, and anything that we can do to help promote. I understand that now he's back driving his car and.
Yep,
that's what I thought. That.
God bless. He did say August 6th, right?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I marked the date correctly.
Yeah, so everybody within my hearing, within the sound of my voice, if you're a fan of Tesla, please do call into his show, and he'll be back and invigorated, and I can't wait, because you know I do miss my guy Tesla, and I'm waiting for him to come back, and it'll be a great comeback for him with all the trouble that he's had recently, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, he's going to try. What I was messaging you about, Doc, was about getting together with him this weekend for kind of like a, you know, let him try it out and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's planning to come back, you know, on his comeback thing in August. Yes. But what I was referring to in your message was for this weekend coming up.
Okay. Well,
just,
yeah,
there's no,
yeah,
there's no mistake.
Oh, okay. I got it now. I'll be there too. You know, whatever I can do, I'll probably be in my car driving around somewhere. But I'll, you know, I have my phone and I'll be ready to go.
I haven't heard back from Cool Mike. Maybe you can.
No, I haven't heard Cool Mike in a while either. We miss him, so
out.
I gotta go tweak him too. But you know, I know Doc, you got yourselves just a few minutes late left here. So you know, I'm gonna bug out and just remind you, I got my show on tomorrow at 2 o'clock Southern Sense. Okay, baby.
All right, great. I'll be there. Thank you very much, everybody. Yeah, for anybody who could who can make it tomorrow, tune in to Southern Sense show at 2 o'clock tomorrow. It's a great show. I dig it. You should too, and let's support our Blog Talk Radio host and get some information, because mostly Southern Sense, Annie's show is extremely informative and relies a lot on current events, what's going on in the world, what's going on with politics, and gets deep into what's really going on with this administration, and it provides information to, you know, for what's going on around the globe as it relates to our country and how our country relates to others, and how we are sort of intertwined, but certainly not in that creepy New World Order kind of way. that's just out of line. But hey, I want to thank everybody for calling in and for listening. Thank you, Dave, the book is still out. I'm sure it's doing very well. Talk about it for a minute, if you will.
Oh, sure. It's called Stay Mad: Observations of a Proletarian, and it's designed to remind people of or inform people of how we got to where we're at, and mostly it was our own fault. You know, there was a lot of things that led up to it. A lot of chess pieces being moved around and put into place. And I think I say on the back cover, the election of Obama was, I think, supposed to be their checkmate move until 2010. So what I'm trying to do is keep people mad until 2012. Read the book, learn a lot about the lefty agenda. There's a lot about Islam in there. There's a lot about Alinsky. There's a lot about some Cloud and Piven stuff. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Oh, and where can we get the book again?
Oh, thank you. Lulu.com.
Lulu.com. Check it out. Get the book.
Stay
it's a
mad.
Great read. Stay Mad. I've got a copy of it right here on my shelf. I've almost finished it, and it is a great read. For first publication, it is fantastic. I can't wait for your next publication.
Well, I appreciate that. That's very kind.
You're very, very welcome. Thank everybody for being here tonight, for taking time out of your busy evening. I know you got lots of things you could be doing, lots of television shows you could be watching, playing with the kids, just relaxing, doing your own thing. I do appreciate you taking the time to come and listen to my show as much as you do. Thank you, Beach Bum. Thank you, Craig, and all the guests I have in the room, Southern Sense, Wahoo Radio, my good man Tesler for coming in for a few minutes. I do appreciate that. Once again, thank you all for being here. We are out. And tune in tomorrow, because we got a lot more to talk about, a lot of good stuff coming up. Love you guys. Love you. Hey, one tin soldier, he rides the wave.
Good night, Doc.
Yeah. Good night. Listen, children, what story?
Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom on a mountain and a valley far below. On the mountain was the treasure buried deep beneath the stone, and the valley before they loved it for the valley.